If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. E-listening on Wednesday, we have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and light of the Supreme Spirit. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Breaking Free of Idealism. Let me pronounce it correctly. Breaking Free of Idealism. It would help if I could pronounce it right. I refer to idealism as the holy withhold from full atmic realization and oneness. So, if you're ready to take that on, let's take a deep breath together. Relax. Let your shoulders down from underneath your ears. Chill. And let's just hang out together with this interesting topic, idealism. And call yourself forward with your intention to integrate as much of your higher self as you possibly can into your physical body, your physical mind, your emotions. Let's see if we can get all of those levels of your consciousness aligned with who you are as a divine embodiment. Of what? Of pure love, of active intelligence, and pure knowingness. Let's put it that way. There is a knowingness that sparks at some point, or something that's greater than the mind simply knows that it knows. And it settles so deeply in your innermost being that there's no wiggle room for doubt. And that happens every single time you touch beyond the linear mind and beyond time to that which is. What am I talking about? Beyond the level of time, time sequencing and thought, is a whole other realm of experiential life that's whole, intact, perfect, and complete right now. In fact, nowness and here-ness defines it probably better than any other way I could describe it. However, in time, we have a human interpretation through the mind, through the brain, that draws out experience in a linear fashion, which is a good thing if you want to function here, but a bad thing if you want to transcend beyond time. And that's the purpose of every spiritual practice that we engage in, is to transcend the known, transcend time, transcend the sense of otherness, of definition and limitation, into present wholeness. We could call that Atmic or God realization. But it's actually a state that we've never left. When you understand that who you are is indistinguishable from divine spirit or the all that is, you realize that the extension of a consciousness probe, i.e. the individualized separate sense of self, with that extension, you are able to enter the arena where there's a play of consciousness and energy that's sequenced in time episodes and is cyclic in nature in the sense that it keeps returning to a similar place on the timeline, which is why things seem to be always the same. If you look at history, if you look at cycles, it's like a repetition of the same thing. Why? Because it is. So the only way to step out of the time sequencing is to go beyond everything that we have placed as a withhold from present wholeness. For example, how much of a role does idealism play in your life? Let's look at this. You may be as surprised as I was to find out how much. First of all, what are we referring to when we speak of idealism? Well, one of the ways it can show up is projecting a better future, a better world, a better self. Not now, but someday. You know, it's one of those tricks the ego mind plays when it identifies with time and material appearance, because that's what egos do. It's all about the fence limitation of the body and the stronghold, the tower, of the separative mind where the ego hangs out. It's king of the castle at that level. And it keeps itself intact in its separative identity by defining itself in limitation. So the ego mind projects along a linear timeline, because that's what ego minds do. And because time exists nowhere but within the physical dimension as an interpretation wrought within the physical brain, it must at some point be recognized for what it is and what it does. And you need to have that impetus, that desire to go beyond. You know, they've done surveys, and they have found that people the world over are absolutely starving spiritually. They want spiritual food. They're so tired of repeating the known, of being taught the known, of being reminded of the known, of being reconditioned again and again, life after life, in the known, that many, many people today are choosing to define themselves as spiritual rather than religious. What's the difference? In a religion, you are following the experiences of another person or persons, very often based upon some major teacher that appeared on the planet thousands of years ago. And you're trying to apply a teaching which maybe was very, very good 5,000 years ago, but today it doesn't quite come off. And so you have to fabricate an existence, an imaginary existence, based upon something that's not here and now and alive and vital and present. And it doesn't set you free. Why? Because it's only the knowledge of the truth that sets you free. Not reading about a truth that was expounded by another person, but what you can only go, okay, I believe that. Okay, but what about you? What's your experience? If you haven't brought that, whatever it is, teaching into practical application in your life, to where it's become a living experience in your direct reality, it's not real to you. You've accepted it on a belief. And you always have a doubt. Because until you know for yourself, there's always going to be questions and doubt. And there's a place that you can move to right now that is above questioning and a beyond doubt. But you have to have the intention to move yourself to that place. Now, I was thinking the other day, You know, Sai Baba says the body is a bubble. And reality is when that bubble is pricked. He gives the example of a wave in the ocean. The wave is not separate from the ocean. But for a moment it arises on the surface of the ocean. And one could, hypothetically think that maybe the wave imagines itself as separate. That would be like us arising above the ocean of God and assuming we're separate, but the next instant dissolving into the ocean. So is the wave different from the ocean? No, not at all. Never was, never could be. Like that, we live and move and have our being within the ocean of existence, within the eternality of here and nowness, fullness, ever-completedness, and we just arise in time episodes and lose sight of that. So I was wondering, okay, what is the major thing that prevents the pricking of that bubble of illusion that holds this dream of separation from the all that is intact? And I was given an answer that shocked me. I had never thought of it before. And I heard inwardly, it's idealism. And I thought, whoa, okay. Well, what is idealism? Well, it's when you put anything, I don't care what it is, above and beyond your present nowness. That person, that teaching, that ideal, that whatever it is, you put it up higher and unattainable somehow. You define it as unattainable here and now within your own self-judgment. Well, Jesus was the only Son of God. I can't be a son of God. Jesus was perfect and devoid of sin. I'm a sinner saved by grace. You know, that kind of idea. You hear that kind of dialectic a lot amongst Christians. I can remember saying it myself. But when you understand the man Jesus, who at one time had been a disciple, just like most of us are now, we had been in the process of breaking free of all the things that we've used to define ourselves in limitation, to bind us to the wheel of time and causation. He went through it all. And never at any time did he personally say he was the only way. He said, out of the Christ consciousness, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no man comes to the Father save by me. What did he mean? He was speaking from that level that we call the soul, or the Christ consciousness, that you have to move through those levels inwardly in soul transcendence, lifting above the mind into the soul, which is that state of awareness where one is one with the Father. But it is a stage that at some point you move into the monad or the spirit where you can say, I and the Father are one. When you have seen me, you have seen the Father. And Jesus could only say that because he had broken free of idealism and had merged in soul awareness beyond that level that we define as the soul into the monad, or the direct presence of the all that is itself. And likewise, every single one of us, when we break free of even the concept that we are a jivi, an individualized separate fragment, we break free of that illusion too, and we move back within ourselves to the I am presence, or the monad, or the one without a second, or the Father, or the Atma. You can call it all those things. You have the direct experience that one alone is all that is. It's a direct realization that will come to every person at some point. We apparently, as souls, determine the timing for that. You can't, for example, if you're a flower, demand that the sun cause you to bloom. If you're a fruit, you can't yell at the tree and command it to make you ripen sooner. To each there comes a perfect timing for the pricking of that bubble of separateness, of that withholding from truly receiving the Divine Spirit as who and what you are right now. Right now. The teaching we're bringing forward this evening is going to be perhaps the next step for a few of you. Maybe for some of you it will give you an idea of perhaps questioning that tendency to always be a follower, always be a devotee, and perhaps it will give you the impetus to go and check your own knowing. What is your own knowing? So, the glamour, I would call it, of idealism is a state of consciousness in which one has become attached to the idea of not now, but later. Sometime in the future, I'll be greater, better, purer, wiser, holier, more spiritual. Or, one day the world will be transformed. There will be peace and equality amongst all. Or, one day Christ will return and establish the kingdom of God upon earth. You know, Jesus said when he stepped out of the wilderness experience of 40 days of fasting and being tested by the ego, or Satan, as you would want to call whatever that adversarial force that came to test him. He said, behold, the kingdom of God has come. It came because he broke free of the idealism that he had been indoctrinated in, no doubt, as a Jewish boy. A young Jewish man. He had to break free of that religious indoctrination and the training that he had received, undoubtedly, by his rabbinical mentors. So the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven, is simply the externalization of soul awareness operating through human beings. It's when you and I are manifesting that higher state of awareness that we call the Son of God, the Christ within, the living love the transcendental sense of self that realizes it's more than the body. It's not the thoughts. It's not the feelings. It's not those levels in the physical world that keep changing. It's not the body that changes in its totality every 7 years. It's none of that. It is that pure existence, awareness, and bliss of the all that is, that dwells within each one of us as our true, authentic identity. You see, as odd as it may seem, there's only one here. There's only the Son of God. There's only God. The one, it is said in the ancient scriptures, having no one to know and love itself, said, let me become many, that I may experience being known and loved. And so that one spirit, that one oceanic being, represented itself into many wavelets, which we could call the soul, the individualized self. And yet, when each of us as a soul recognizes that we are indeed that one, that we are indeed an embodiment of that supreme creative intelligence, of that pure unconditional love, of that all-knowingness, we all say with Jesus, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father except through me. Because that is the radiant way. When you meditate and go deeply within, back behind your eyes, you will find a strand of golden energy that can look very much like a lighted pathway. It can resemble a tiny, tiny little thin thread. Perhaps it appears to different people in different ways. For me, it looked like an alignment of a corridor of suns, one sun after another, after another, after another. And I soared right up in through the center of all those aligned suns. So, just go with whatever appears for you or not. Maybe none of that will appear. Maybe your way is different. But when Jesus speaks of the radiant way, W being capitalized, that's what he's speaking of. That's the way into the kingdom of God and into the presence of the Most High, or the presence of God, or the monad, or the Father, the it of itself, the all it is, the submad. It's all many terms we can use. But it is a direct inner journey, because Jesus also said that the kingdom of heaven is within. Sometimes he uses the word heaven, sometimes the word God. But the heaven we seek is dwelling in the present, here and now. It's not a place you go to out there. It's not a place that is outside of your own human temple. Your physical body is your own temple, your tabernacle. God lives inside you. As your loving, as your awareness, as your life force, as your creativity, as your intelligence, as everything that gives rise to joy and peace and fulfillment. That is the God presence within. It's there all the time. It will never be greater than it is right now in this moment. But you know, we do have to prepare a place to receive the cognition, the revelation of that greater presence that dwells within us. That's the purpose of all spiritual practice. We have to refine the vibrations within and without. We have to clean the temple. And all of the teachings of Jesus and the Gospels, really, you could apply to yourself. You could see yourself as Jesus doing all of those actions. What was he doing? He was cleaning the temple of the thieves and robbers and charlatans and all of the false thoughts that block our direct perception of ourself as the ocean of loving mercy and bliss. That is the Atma. That is the true self. So, life is lost in dreaming, and being is lost in becoming. One of my favorite statements from Sai Baba. And it has to do with, again, us always imagining there's somebody out there that's going to do it for us, that's a greater being than we are, a greater soul. You see, all souls are equally great. It's been said that if you would put the soul of the cruelest, most wicked man that we could possibly think of, right next to the soul that was Jesus the Christ, you would not be able to tell them apart. So as we mentioned last week, evil behavior only comes out of minds that have become distorted through evil conditioning. Beyond that evil mind is a pure soul, a pure emanation of God. So at that soul level, everyone is the Christ. Everyone is the blemishless Lamb of God. And as Jesus has told us in A Course in Miracles, if you want to be like me, I will help you. If you want to be different, I will wait until you change your mind. And you will change your mind. So at some point, we have to change our mind that we're sinful, fallen, less loved, less worthy, less holy than Jesus Christ, than Sai Baba, than Gautama Buddha, than whoever, put your name in there, whatever. At some point we have to realize we all come up through the same process. And we all have our time to bloom as that magnificent and very unique divine expression. So idealism is probably one of the biggest withholds that we have from being practical grounded workers on the planet. Number one, if you keep yourself in an inferior position, you feel you don't have much to offer. Now, how can I make a difference? You hear that all the time. I'm just an ordinary person. Oh, no, you're not. You are an incarnation of God, whether you're aware of it or not. Now, you can hang out in that, I'm just a poor, miserable, groveling worm, if you want to. But I'll tell you, quite frankly, it sucks. You're going to get tired of it after a while. And it closes the door on everything that most people would like to have in this life, which is happiness, peace, abundance, things coming. But the universe really supports truth, and it supports action. And by the actions you take, you are demonstrating the truth that you're operating on. If you kind of like walk through life with your shoulders hunched over, looking down at the ground and not feeling very much of yourself, the universe will send all of those witnesses to say, you're not much. Who do you think you are? You can't even pay your rent. all the witnesses to the state of consciousness that you claim for yourself will be there. But the minute you have the self-confidence to stand and say, I am that I am, this is what's so for me, and right or wrong, I'm going to give this my best shot, because this is what I feel that I'm supposed to do. You just have the courage to walk out whatever is so for you. And the minute you do that, again, all the witnesses will arise and begin to support you in that stance that you have taken. So you have the complete control of how your universe, how the people around you see you and react to you. A victim always attracts a victimizer. It's a reflection and a play of polarity there. So you have the right to state the terms upon which you base your life. And the worldview and the state of consciousness that you would like to have as your reality. Every really genuine, true master will support and encourage you in that. Every single master will encourage you to be true to yourself. Oh my goodness, I remember John Roger, my spiritual mentor. Must have been when I first started seriously studying with him. He saw that I had a tendency to be very idealistic, very devotional, always ready to throw myself on the next altar. And he said, never follow this form, pointing to his physical body, or this little spiritual group called the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness. But be true to yourself. When you're true to yourself as soul, then only will you be true to Sai Baba, to me, to Jesus, to all of us. So be loyal to the soul. And boy, did that help me through the years. That was such a signpost. And he would never, 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 ever allow you to deify or put him up on a pedestal or whatever. He would go out of his way to appear ordinary. And if you had any prejudices or triggers, he'd be sure to find that push button and push it. You know, if he had anything that really bothered you, he would make sure that he broke that illusion, you know, regarding his own behavior. And he said one hymn, he said, I'm not a guru, I'm not a master, I'm not God, I'm nothing special. He said, I'm just a nice guy. But you know what I saw traveling with him? I saw mastership. I saw a genuine Christian, a little Christ, which is the meaning of the word Christian. I saw the Christ operating through him all the time. I never saw that he wasn't connected, that he was always walking that radiant way. And his thoughts, his words, and his actions were completely aligned. In the most ordinary of ways, he walked like Jesus through the day, helping people where he found them, making their lives better wherever he found them. And he lit up everyone that he interacted with. I didn't know much about him physically when I went on my first trip with him to see Sai Baba. I had just physically met him, albeit I had been working with him on the inner planes for 20 years. But physically, I had just met him. But I recognized that he had the Christ consciousness straight away. And I was very impressed by his demeanor, his behavior. And yeah, he looks like a shoe salesman. But oh my gosh, I can tell you after all these decades of working with him, he had it. He had it. And he awakened it in me. I have it now. Why? Because I had the wit to look. Which he always says, have the wit to look. It takes great courage to see the face of God, because you have to see the face of God first in your own face, and then in every face. And I hung in there. And like every single soul, you go through the same things. We all go through the valleys and the quagmires and the plateaus and the dry wilderness and the threshing floor and the testing and the crucifixion. And the resurrection. That story enacted by Jesus 2,000 years ago is the spiritual odyssey in some form of every single one of us. We don't all have to do what Jesus did, you know, in terms of being put on a cross and nailed there. Thank God. But you know, on the other hand, I'm sure there's been lifetimes where we have been burned at the stake. I can clearly remember that myself. And I can also remember having my head chopped off. Why? Because I was speaking the truth at a time when it was not popular to do that. I'm still doing that. And now, you know, I live in America and I can do that. But I remember what it was to be so idealistically attached to my truth at the time that I went to the stake and I went to the guillotine. And you probably have too. some variation of that. But nothing can touch or affect who you are. Yeah, they can chop the head off the body. They can kill the body. But what happens? You're out of the body before the head gets chopped off. You're out of the body before the flame ever reaches you. You're out of the body before you die. Why? Because you're smart. You're not going to stay in the body if you see somebody's going to burn it. I mean, hello. So we have the ability to externalize our consciousness from the form. And the minute we do, we're in the all that is, as the all that we are. And we're blissful. Then we watch those poor suckers down there trying to kill the body, thinking they've gotten rid of us. And then we reincarnate. And it's our time. We get to put them to the stake, chop their heads off, or whatever. And so the karmic wheel goes around and around, and we play these roles back and forth and all the silliness that goes with it. And throughout the Piscean Age, we've been so attached to our idealism. Our Holy Mother Church, whatever. You know, whatever we put up there is the icon of our existence. We've all done it. None of us are exempt. But you know what? We are collectively awakening, and we are starting to question the old conditioning, because we're beginning to awaken and see, you know what? Been here, done this before. I'm going to make a different choice here. Maybe this time I'll incarnate as an atheist or an agnostic. Or maybe I'll play with that idea for a while and see what that feels like. But then, you know what? You can turn that into an idealism too, can't you? You can turn that into a religious belief too. An agnostic? Religious? Oh, yeah. Religion means to be bound to your ideal. So, yeah, you can make an ism out of anything. The only way to be free is to be free of all of the have-tos, all of the shoulds, all of the idealisms, all of the projections, which means you have to question your thoughts. What am I being loyal to here, apart from who and what I am? You don't get any brownie points with Jesus by being loyal to him. He doesn't want you to be loyal to him. He wants you to be like him. I was thinking about Mother Mary the other day. You know, the soul that had been Mother Mary. One of the masters said that she'd had two incarnations after her lifetime as Mother Mary. One of which, I think maybe both of them, had been as a nun. That must have been a real reality check for her, if she had any recall of her previous life. But today, she's one of the masters in the spiritual brotherhood. She's not in incarnation right now, but will be, probably in the next 200 years, according to one of the masters. But like all the masters, she appears to people periodically. Now, you know, she appears to Catholics and has at Lourdes and different places, Fatima, in her, you know, Christian garb, you know, the white gown and the blue robe and the whole nine yards, because that's the way they were expecting her to appear. But if you met her today, you know what? She'd probably have on track shoes and Levi's and a hoodie. She'd probably be out jogging in the park. Or maybe she would be sitting at a board meeting with a suit and high heels and makeup. And you know what I'm saying? We keep living consistent with present nowness. We don't act weird and look strange today, in today's world. We learn to be that divine self that we are without having to embellish it with a garb and a certain lingo and a certain behavior. You can show up like John Roger as a truly aware, compassionate man that sees the good and the divine in all people and things and has the ability to awaken that wherever he goes. You and I can do that too. It just requires remembering initially who we are until we don't have to be reminded anymore. It's inside us experientially. We have a reference point for it, and we stay in that loving space. We keep running that knowingness into our mind and into our words and into our physical actions. And like him, we find common ground with every person. He said, you know, when I'm talking to an alcoholic, they'll swear I'm an alcoholic too, because I come right in and match them on their level. But I don't stay there. I don't get down in that with them. But I reach into where they are and then I lift them. And he said, there's not been one experience that you've had that I haven't had. I've been an alcoholic. So I can relate to people who are alcoholics. That's how John Roger would talk. So his definition for God, I think, is the greatest definition I've ever heard. John Roger said that God is the soul that has had all experiences. So we could have some tea with that one, couldn't we? Because there again, people get so freaked out when they think Jesus probably had sex. Very likely with Mary Magdalene. Very likely they were married. There's a lot to support that. Does that make him not holy? Who is the person on the planet that didn't get here through sex? So, you know, we develop these idealistic, crazy little mythologies that we wrap around people like Jesus, the other masters, Sai Baba. You know, we run the shtick with the avatar too, and all he wants is for you to realize you're the same that he is. When he looks at you, he sees himself. And so we have to begin to question why we put ourselves in a secondary position in life with regards to any other person. I have to question that. Because breaking free of idealism is breaking free from the holy withhold that's keeping us just short of full realization, of really waking up. And it seems so noble. That's the problem. It seems like it's humble. It seems like it's noble. It seems like it's a good thing. Which may be in the very beginning of the path, it is. Maybe there's a season and a cycle when idealism is a good thing. But I'm not talking to beginners. Every one of these seminars is for people who are right on the edge of breaking free, or are in process of breaking free, or who have broken free, and I'm simply validating. That's what I've been given to do and share in these weekly seminars. I'm not speaking to the beginner. I'm speaking to those of you like myself that will not stop short of full realization and oneness. So I've been looking at my own idealism, and believe you me, I can certainly speak about idealism. My life has been one constant altar and idealism after another. I was very fond of saying what a poor devotee of Sai Baba I was, because I could never quite jump through all of the hoops. I could never quite do all the things that I thought a good devotee of Sai Baba would do. And every time I would say that, I would feel him kind of like jerk my reins. And finally he told me how much he disliked hearing me say that. That it was the height of egotism, because I was taking the position that I was separate from him. I was speaking out of a false identity. And I kept it up for a few more years, until finally he got my attention. As he will. You know, God will get your attention. And I was like, stop it. You are not the author of your thoughts, I am. You are not the author of your actions, I am. You are incapable of doing anything separate from me. But he told me. Like, wow. Because we all know the goof-off things that we do, right? Well, who's judging? Only the ego mind that would keep you stuck in idealism so he can play a little bit longer through your body. It's time to dissolve that ego mind in the freedom of realizing that everything you long to be, you are already and could never be anything else but that. As I'm so fond of saying, in highest truth, we have never left the heart of God. Remain we still as God created us, in original innocence and peace. And so, I offer that to you tonight for your consideration. Breaking free of idealism. The holy withhold from atmic realization and oneness. So what are you holding back with? And why? Why? Why delay present bliss, present joy, present fulfillment? But, you know, enjoy your idealism until you're tired of it. And you will get tired of it. And you will yearn to pop that bubble. So let's go out chanting Anahiu. Deep breath. Anahiu. I'd like to close with an invocation from the Brotherhood and Sisterhood of Light. Let the forces of light bring illumination to mankind. Let the spirit of peace be spread abroad. May people of goodwill everywhere meet in a spirit of cooperation. May forgiveness on the part of all people be the keynote at this time. Let power attend the efforts of the great ones. So let it be, and help us to do our part. And just put yourself in that category of the great ones, because every soul is a Mahatma. Blessings and light and grace to each one of you. Namaste.